I'm Rich. I'm an addict. I'm from the Tidewater area of Narcotics Anonymous. My home group is the Winding Road in a suburb called Great Bridge in the beautiful city of Chesapeake. And that has been my home group for over 5.5 years. And yes, I am nervous. But I hope the God of my own understanding will carry me through this process and help me deliver a message of Narcotics Anonymous that will help another addict stay clean for another day, because that is my hope. The hope that Narcotics Anonymous has is that an addict, any addict, can get clean, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. I did not think that was possible. I was in active addiction for 34 years. I have had more jobs than I am old. But the job I've been at now, I've been there almost 6 years. I've been clean for 6 years and 3 months. This is my seventh Brana. My first Brana, I had 3 months clean. And after the speaker on either Friday or Saturday night, I put it on my bucket list that I wanted to speak here. Be careful what you ask for. And lo and behold, I want to thank George for this opportunity. And if I get emotional, I don't care. Because I know how to feel today. Although I don't always know what I feel, I know that I feel today. And for so many years, you know, really the only thing I felt was anger. So I was 12 years old the first time I got high. And I came from a relatively good Christian home. And for years and years, I used to blame my parents for how I turned out. But the truth of the matter is, it was not their fault. They did the absolute best they could with what they had. And where they came from was vastly different to where I came from. So I give my parents a lot of credit for the way they raised us, because their job was to teach me how to live my life away from them. And that's my job now as a single dad, is to raise my daughter to live a successful life away from me. And I will not tell her what success is. She will have to define that for herself, because my success may be different than hers. And to me, today, sometimes success is just staying clean for another day. So anyways, like I said, I was getting high when I was 12. By the time I was 16, it was a daily event. And school was an every other day event. And somehow, I graduated on time. Didn't skip any classes. I skipped a lot of classes, but I didn't skip any grades. And pretty much high school was about the only thing I ever really completed. Went to college shortly afterwards, got kicked out twice from the same college. Joined the army, got kicked out. All the while getting high. And if there's anybody here that thinks that pot is not a gateway drug, it was for me. Looking back over the years, it absolutely opened the door for other things for me. And it was easy to hang out with the other misfits in school just so I could feel a part of something, because I never felt a part of anything at my home. And, I hung out with people who accepted me, but what I realized is they only accepted me when I had some drugs. I was a class clown, always looking for attention. You know how the song goes, looking for love in all the wrong places. That was me. And I did a lot of attention seeking. I had a lot of attention seeking behaviors. And honest to God, that still haunts me some today, even clean. I was talking about spiritual principles last night and character defects, and man, I have my fair share. So I got married for the first time when I was 20, and I was divorced a year and a half later with no children. And I'm very grateful for that. I'm grateful that that relationship did not bring any children into this world, because I was not ready to be a dad. I didn't know how to be a dad. I didn't know how to be an employee. I was unemployable, going from job to job. Everything I ever had in life, even up to prior to getting clean, was provided for me by somebody else, and it was mostly my parents. They bailed me out when they shouldn't have. They let me back home when they shouldn't have. And even in my teen years, I told myself I would never steal from my parents. And they were the easiest targets. And I stole from them more than I stole from anybody else. And incredibly, incredibly, they loved me anyways, as best as they could. Sip. So, I got involved in an online relationship in the spring of 1999. Yes, I fell for internet love. And I was on parole in one city and probation in another city and thought it was a great idea to pack my little Honda and drive to California. So that's exactly what I did. I was going to meetings at the time, and I was supposed to be her savior. And that's what we had talked about, because I was going to meetings, and if I remember right, I had about 10 days clean when I left. So I was going to move to California and save California. About 30 days after I moved in with her, never had seen her in person before, I started using. I was using with her friends. I got a job, relatively decent job, but was using. And her and I used together. And then we decided to get married. And a year after we got married, the most beautiful gift I have ever gotten in my entire life came into mine. And she just happens to be sitting right up front supporting me. And she has supported me through this whole process ever since. And if you know me, some of y'all do, know that she is my world. Staying clean comes first. Sometimes she ties with that, because she needs to know that she is loved. And she does. There's no doubt in her mind that she is loved. But I'll get to some of that later. So anyways, the marriage went south. Go figure. She went through her own private hell, and you know, I went through mine at the same time. And it was decided in 2010 that I get my daughter, take her back home, which is in Chesapeake, Virginia, because it's always been easy for me to get on my feet at home because I have support. You know, I have family support, where in California I didn't have any family. Because once her and I got divorced, you know, nobody knew who I was after that. So we moved back home, and I started using, I think within about 6 months. And I used heavy. I used really heavy. My addiction took me up to about $600 a week. And I was making pretty good money at the time. I was putting in a lot of hours to make that money. And my dope dealer was my coworker, and that made it real convenient. Made it real convenient to get some on Monday, get some on Wednesday, pay for it Friday, be broke on Saturday. And all the while, neglecting my daughter. Not completely, but not giving her the quality of life that we came back to Virginia to give her. To this day, I look back. I don't know how I did it. And I probably didn't do it, but, you know, that's on my amends list. I owe her a big amends, and she's going to get it someday soon. So, I remember towards the end of the bitter ends, the phone calls late at night when I would tell the lie that I have to go out of town to work, but really what I was doing was going out of town, getting a hotel room, and using for the weekend. I remember the phone calls from my dad telling me to stop what I was doing, because he knew. Just stop and come home. Just stop and come home. All the while, him knowing a little bit about addiction, telling me that I had a choice, and I didn't think I had a choice. I was sure that I was going to die a low-life using addict. I felt that that was my destiny. That was what I had become. I remember the phone calls from my daughter late at night crying, begging for her dad to just come home. Stop, Dad, just come home. Where are you? What are you doing? I need you. I miss you. And I ignored him because I was selfish, self-centered, and egotistical. Sometimes I'm still that today, but I'm a little better. And I would, when I would answer the phone, I would just lie to her, yeah, I'm working, sweetheart. I can't come home right now. I'll be home Sunday or Monday or whatever the day was that I decided to lie about. So fast forward to April 11th, 2011. It was a Monday, and I had been telling a lie to both her and my family that I was out of town working when I was not too far away, stuck in a hotel room using. And it got to be about 2 or 3 in the afternoon, Monday afternoon, and something happened. And I can only say that it was the grace of God, the God of my understanding, making me not only, it's kind of hard to explain. I wasn't, the guilt and shame absolutely was there, but there was something else there, and I can't really say what it was other than the God of my understanding making his presence known in my life at about 2 o'clock that afternoon, because the last one I took wasn't fun, didn't get me high, and it didn't numb the pain. And I drove around for a little while. I had ran out. I drove around for a little while, and I contemplated getting some more, and I kept thinking to myself, man, this ain't working no more. This just isn't working. I need to do something, but I don't know what to do. I mean, I knew what to do, but I wanted somebody to do it for me like I always did in the past. And, of course, we know how that works. You know, it doesn't work. For me, it didn't. Oddly enough, I still had money in my pocket when I went home at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 o'clock in the evening. That's dinner time at my house. So I walk in, and my mom, dad, and my daughter are sitting at the dinner table. And the first thing out of my mouth when I got there, I think, this is how I remember it, that I told my dad, if I don't get to a meeting tonight, I'm going to die. And I knew that if I didn't get to a meeting that night, I was going to die, because I wasn't sure if he could keep me there with money in my pocket. I wasn't sure if my daughter could keep me there with money in my pocket. I wasn't sure that God could keep me there with money in my pocket. And I knew I needed to do something, and I knew I needed to do something different, but I just wasn't sure what. So the only thing I knew to say was that if I don't go to a meeting, I'm going to die. Because that's what I felt. Talk about desperation. I did not want to die a low-life using addict. I did not want to die and leave my daughter behind that I have such a special bond with. I touched her before she was ever born. I touched her little head before it ever came into this world. I pulled her out with no nurse, nobody in that room but me, her mom, and the God of my understanding. And I took my shirt off and I held her close to me. And I got that bond. And that bond has been unbreakable ever since. And the first words I spoke to her, of course she didn't know what I was saying, but I didn't care, was that you are my little girl, I am your daddy, and ain't nobody ever going to change that. And I remind her of that every so often. Because sometimes, you know, we need reminders from people that we are loved, especially in low moments. So my dad said, well, the only way you're going to stay the night is if you go to a meeting. I suggest you go find one. I pulled my wallet out, pulled the rest of the money I had out, put it on the table, hugged my daughter. This part is a little fuzzy. My mom didn't say a whole lot, but the look of disgust on her face said everything. So I went upstairs in my room, got my meeting list out. And again, this is a Monday. And again, the addict behavior kicking in. Instead of calling a point of contact for a Monday meeting, I called a point of contact for a Friday meeting. The fuck, man? I don't know. Sorry. Left a message, and about 5 minutes after six, my phone rang, and it was this guy calling me back. And he asked me straight up, what do you need a meeting for? I'm just, you know, just asking, just curious. You got to get a paper signed, your wife on your back, your parents on your back. And I told him. I was honest. For the first time in 34 years, I was honest with myself. I said, if I don't get to a meeting tonight, I'm going to die. And I don't want to die like this. And I really didn't, but I didn't know what to do. And he said, well, why don't you come to my home group? Way across town. So I said, my dad said he would take me, so my dad drove me. This guy met me in the parking lot. And since there's a million people in this program with his name's Joe. And that still keeps it anonymous. Because y'all don't know who he is. But anyways, I don't know if I'm supposed to do that or not, but I did, but oh well. So I meet this guy, and he tells my dad, he's in good hands. I'll take it from here. And we walk into the meeting, and he introduces me to a couple of people before the meeting starts. And I sit down right up front. Not that I want to be a spectacle or not that I want to be in the spotlight. I was just tired of sitting in back. And when they asked if there was anybody new, please raise your hand, identify yourself. I raised my hand, said, my name is Rich and I'm an addict. And all I could do for the rest of that meeting was cry. And I don't know why at that time I was crying. I don't know if it was relief. I don't know if the pain had just... Well, I don't know, probably all of that, but I didn't care. I didn't care. And I've been going to meetings 25 years. Longest clean time I ever had was 9 months. That included while I was in the Army. And my original home group was the Friday night HAL group. Right, Lance? Ask Lance to tell you a story. He's got a good one. And yeah, it's about me. So anyways, my glasses are fogging up. So I finish the meeting out. I meet a few more people, get a few phone numbers. And in my head, I'm thinking, I'm probably not going to call these people. But I asked this guy who introduced himself to me first through that phone call, what do I do next? And he said, "Here's my you got my number. Call me tomorrow and go to a meeting." I said, "Okay." So the next day came. It was my first, the next meeting I went to was my first meeting clean. Thank God for people who reach out to newcomers. Newcomers are the most important person at a meeting, because if there weren't any newcomers for us to reach out to, it would get awful boring talking to each other. I really feel that way. That's my truth. It doesn't have to be yours. So I meet this guy at a meeting the following night. He introduced himself to me. He was the sponsee of this guy, Joe. And I was feeling a sort of relief. I was feeling some sort of belonging. But I can't quite put my finger on it, because, you know, I was still coming off of a good run. My body's still trying to catch up. But I remember asking after that meeting, "Hey, what do I do now?" And he said, "Here's my number. Call me and go to a meeting tomorrow." So the next day, I called Joe. And he met me at the Wednesday meeting. And about 2 weeks later, I asked him to sponsor me. And it was a God-given relationship. It was a God-focused relationship. It was God-centered in every way imaginable. I had no idea how to have a successful, healthy relationship prior to that, because every relationship that I had ever had, I ruined in some way or another. Everyone. Whether it be platonic, romantic, whatever. Employee-related, I ruined it all. So now that he's sponsoring me, I go back to his home group on Monday night, and he gives me a basic text. I said, "Okay, what do I do with this?" He said, "Just read some of the stories in the back, and we'll get to what's coming up next here shortly." So I did all that, and I became a sponge. I became a "what do I do next" type of person. Because I tell you what, I threw everything that I knew about living away when I came into Narcotics Anonymous and decided to get clean and try a new way to live. I threw it all away because none of it ever worked. None of it. I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to pay my bills. I didn't know how to go to work regularly. I didn't know how to do what I was told. I didn't know none of that crap. So I said, "What do I do next?" And I did that for a long time. And I still do that. I'll call my sponsor and say, "Hey, man, here's the situation. What do I do?" And he'll offer his suggestion. But now I've learned in this process that, you know, I can ask more than one person, "What do I do?" And I oftentimes will do that because I get different perspectives on different topics. So I worked my first assignment, which was read the symbol for 30 days and then write about it. And when I was writing about it, I had these huge moments of clarity. The broader the base, the higher the point of freedom. Who would have thought that? But another addict. And I had this excitement, this newfound excitement for something I had never had before. And that was a program of Narcotics Anonymous. I had never had a program of Narcotics Anonymous before. So my sponsor said, "Share that." So I went to a meeting thinking that I'm the only one who knows that the greater the base, the broader the base, the higher the point of freedom. I am so blessed to be the only one that knows this. Wrong. There were other people after the meeting who shared in that same elation that I had, this newfound something. I still wasn't quite sure what it was, but I knew it was good. That I did know. So then he has me work a few more assignments, and when I had 25 days clean, my second sponsor told me that it's important to remember dates
where I have moments of clarity that are very powerful, so that I can look back on them specifically. And when I came to this program, the only thing I really wanted to do was stop getting high. I didn't know what it was like to recover. I didn't know what it was like to be a productive member of society. I didn't know what it was like to pay bills regularly. Sometimes I still don't know what that's like, but I'm getting better. But at 25 days clean, I'm laying in my bed, and I wasn't reading anything particularly, you know, nothing was really grabbing me, but this emotion just washed over me. You know, you hear people saying here in our literature says it, that the compulsion to use, the obsession to use will be lifted. Keep coming if it hasn't. Do what we do if it hasn't. That's my suggestion. And at 25 days clean, this emotion washed over me. And I started crying because the obsession to get high was gone. And I had no idea that it would feel so good. This load of bricks was gone off of my back, and I cried. I cried because I was so grateful. That doesn't sound good. So the first time I was asked to speak, I had 30 days clean. It was at a men's sponsor line. And I'm sharing these things for the newcomer that doesn't think they have anything to offer. Keep coming, because a newcomer with 2 days clean can tell a newcomer with 1 day clean how they got to two. I am a firm believer in that. If you don't think you have anything to offer, hang around for another day. I spoke at our annual men's sponsor line gathering. I was the first speaker. I was excited. I was nervous. I was excited and nervous, and I spoke for about 15 minutes, and I couldn't tell you what it was about. Couldn't tell you what I shared. Although I do remember sharing how on fire I was for this program that had saved my life. And I knew that I didn't have to do this forever. At 30 days clean, I knew I did not have to do this forever. I knew that I only had to do it today. And somebody told me, right before I spoke that first time, if you don't believe you can do this, believe that I believe you can do this. And that is a spiritual principle that has carried me through this process. I can't tell you how many times. And I share that with my sponsees. If you don't believe, believe that I believe. And I'm blessed to have two of my sponsees here who have never been to Branham. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I went to 112 or something like that meetings in my first 90 days. My dad took me to a meeting every day for about my first 30 days. And then there was a couple of meetings by the house. And he said, I'm going to let you take the car. And I was like, what? And I knew that I had to have some integrity with that. And I knew that I had to do what I said I was going to do, and that was, I'm going to go to the meeting 15 minutes early, Pop. I'm going to hang out a few minutes, catch the meeting before the meeting, and I'm going to hang out for no more than 15 minutes after the meeting to get the meeting after the meeting, and then I'll be home at blah, blah, blah time. And I did that every time, because he needed that peace. My dad needed that peace, because I put them through hell so many times. And that's just something I learned in Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't learn that on my own. You guys taught me that. You taught me to do what I say I'm going to do. You taught me the importance of that. You taught me that doing such things, as simple as doing what I say I'm going to do, builds my self-esteem. Because those are esteemable acts. And the only way to build self-esteem is to do something esteemable. So then I got a job. And I was employable. I hated where I worked. I hated my boss, but I loved what I do for a living. And I made the best of it. And I stayed clean. And I went to meetings every day. And I called my sponsor every day for about the first year and a half. Because that's what someone suggested I do. I remember 25 years ago, some of the meetings I went to, some of the gatherings I went to afterwards with nothing but men, they would make the person with, they would tell the person with the least amount of clean time to do the dishes because that would keep you clean. That's how it used to go. It's not like that anymore. You know, I've not been to a meeting in a long time where a newcomer with 4 or 5 days clean has raised their hand wanting to dump some whatever, and then an old timer tell them to shut up, you ain't got nothing to share. I haven't heard that in a long time. My process was that at 5 days clean, I needed to say something, and however it came out, that's how it came out. And mostly it was just pain. And I did that regularly. I shared regularly at meetings. I didn't share at every meeting I went to, and I still don't do that today because sometimes I go just to listen. And my reasons for staying clean today have changed. And they change regularly, and I'm okay with that. Sometimes I stay clean for me. That's the top one. Because with no me, there is no we. And with no we, there is no me. Sometimes I stay clean to build a relationship with my daughter. Sometimes I stay clean for her. Sometimes I stay clean because that's all I know to do. And one of the other moments of clarity I had when I got clean was that, dang, man, it is a lot easier to stay clean than it is to get clean. Wow. And I don't have to do this the rest of my life. I just got to do it today. I'm cool with that. I can do that. That I can. Had very few white knuckle moments in recovery. But I did find myself at about a year and a half clean, going through some complacency where the only meeting I was going to was my home group. And that lasted for probably a couple of months. I'd slacked off on calling my sponsor. He knew that I was complacent. He would tell me, and I would get mad, and I'd say, no, I'm not. Just busy. And I was complacent. And after a meeting one night, one of my sponsee brothers, my close friend, said, yeah, Rich, nobody asks about you at the meetings anymore. And that was what I needed to hear to get me back on track. And that's exactly what I did. I got back on track. I still try to make 3 to 4 meetings a week. I still try to call my sponsor a couple times a week. And I still reach out at newcomers at meetings. But I'm going to be honest, I don't always get that right. But I don't always get it wrong either. I'm in the middle of my 9th step. And I've got to one of those questions in the book where you read it and you're like, oh, hell no. And you laugh because you identify. And that's one of the things I love about this program is we can laugh at those things with each other, not at each other, because we identify. I'm so glad I don't have to difference myself out of this program if I don't want to, and I choose not to. And early on I said, my dad always told me I had a choice, and I do have a choice. I have a lot of choices. 2? 2. Two. I got 2 minutes. 10. Oh, shit. Oh. Okay, 10 minutes. Some of my sanity has been restored through this process. Not all. I mean, I still say insane things. I still do insane things. And sometimes I really want to just put my great big hands around the skinny, scrawny neck of my boss at work and choke him till his eyes pop out of his head. And then drop him and watch him hit the ground like a rag doll. No, I really want to do that. I don't know if you... I really want to do that sometimes. And sometimes I just walk away. And that's hard. That's hard. Sometimes I have to let someone else be right. Even though I am. I'm being honest. Because he doesn't do what I do.
right? I'm not going to get into that. But sometimes I have to let someone else be right, even if we're both right. And sometimes I just have to let someone else be wrong, too. And just let it go. And not beat them to death with it. And unfortunately, the person I seem to do that with the most is my daughter. And it's probably a learned behavior somewhere down the line. I don't know. I don't really care. Because it's of no consequence how I got that behavior. Like, it's no consequence how I got this disease. I really don't care how I got it. The fact is, I got it. What am I going to do with it? Self-awareness with these things is probably the most powerful tool an addict can have. It's probably the most powerful tool I can have. And when I do something wrong, or when I come out of my mouth sideways, or when I can't let something go, the God of my understanding always makes me feel guilty. And I always go back and apologize to her and let her know that what I said was wrong, what I did was wrong, because that's the things that I want to teach my kid, because nobody taught me that growing up. My life is fantastic today. I might have some high-class problems, but in the grand scheme of things, listening to other people share and listening to other people's problems, yeah, I'm in debt quite a bit. I'm making my way out of that. Yes, I live with my parents, but I put my daughter through private school, and it's been her saving grace. 16 years old, she's not getting high. So I've done something right. I ain't patting myself on the back for what I'm supposed to be doing. It's just part of life. The gifts that this program has given me. I have been employed at the place I'm at now for over 5 years. It's the longest job I've ever held in my entire life. I love what I do. I love where I work. I don't always love my coworkers. And they know that. They don't always love me, and I know that. But it's not bad. My life is really good today. I'm going to close with this. Years ago, there used to be a place in Chesapeake called Serenity Lodge. Some of you know where this was. They had all kinds of meetings there. And some 25 years ago, there wasn't, you know, there weren't as many meetings as there is today. So I went to two different meetings, and one of the other fellowships that I was in, there was a gentleman there, he's gone on, I'm sure, named Rodney, that whenever he was asked to share, he would share the same thing. And I used to laugh. I used to think it was funny because he would get really excited towards the end of sharing his story about having something he had never had before, and that was a program. And I didn't get it. I thought it was funny. I thought, this guy's crazy. Listening to him share, watching him get emotional. Well, you know what? We all get a turn. We all get a turn. I wish that I could tell him thank you, because now I understand his excitement. Now I understand what he meant when he says, today I got something, and that's a program. Like some people, like today, like they get to go to Busch Gardens. Today I got to stand up here and speak to y'all. It's only through Narcotics Anonymous and the God of my understanding and His grace and mercy that I'm able to do that. Today I got something. I got a program of Narcotics Anonymous. Thanks for letting me share.
Awesome job. Now can we have Just for Today?